This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening, where we look back last night at the Jets-Predators game. We look ahead to the Jets-Canucks game, and we talk about everything that's going on in the hockey world. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Coming up in mere minutes, we are going to head out to Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, where the second of the New York Stadium Series games is going to take place in about 30 minutes' time with puck drop between the New York Rangers and the New York Islanders. Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us, so we'll talk to him in mere minutes. Before then, I say good evening to my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg sporting an old-school Illegal Curve toque, and Richard Pollock sporting a toque with a big blue pom-pom on it.
Yeah, Richie's got a beautiful little toque there. Good evening, boys. Got the Stadium Series game coming up tonight. Excited to have Arthur Staple on again. And Jets weren't able to pull out the win yesterday, but, you know, they're still playing some pretty good hockey. Vancouver's going to be a tough test. But as usual, we have a lot to talk about this week. And as usual, I'm ready to go.
That's always good that you're ready to bring your A game. Richie, how are you doing this fine Wednesday evening? Nice day outside.
Yeah, it's a little more mild than it's been in the past couple of days, so can't complain about that.
Exactly right. Thank you. That's very true. We are going to get to the Jets and the Predators game coming up in the next segment. Break down everything that happened last night. The Jets falling to the Nashville Predators 4-3 in a game that they really did need to have. Really, looking at the standings, there's not very many games that they can afford to lose with 27 games left to go in the season, especially a division game against a team that you're chasing in the standings or trying to stay ahead in the standings. And, of course, Nashville leaped over the Jets after last night's defeat. We'll talk about that coming up in next segment, but for now, let's head to the NHL Midweek Hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from Newsday in Long Island, Arthur Staple. Arthur, thanks very much for joining us, and I guess welcome to NHL Midweek. And how is Yankee Stadium on this blustery January night?
Well, you guys are hardly ones I can complain to about being cold. You've had probably a more brutal winter than we could ever imagine here, but it is a lot colder, I think, for the fans who came out for Rangers Devils on Sunday and some of the media that I was talking to. Definitely you can feel the chill, and I think the teams just got on the ice for warm-ups, and you know, talking to a few of the Islanders who skated here yesterday when it was about a few degrees warmer for their practice than it is right now. I think a few of them said it did take a little while. You know, it was a little bracing, the cold, once you felt it on the ice, and it took a little bit longer to get limbered up and feel a little bit loose, so I think they had to adjust some of their pregame stuff for that. But I think a lot of the guys also said, you know, having it at night, you know, keeping that same routine where you're roughly about the same start time as you would for any other game definitely helps. So they're on the ice. There's a lot of fans here. They're all bundled up, and we're just about a few minutes away from getting ready to go.
Are we expecting that there's going to be any delay to the start time? You mentioned the game on Sunday between the Devils and the Rangers. That was delayed because of ice glare, and there's been a history of delays when it comes to these stadium series or these outdoor games. Are they still scheduled for a puck drop at 7:30 Eastern?
I think they are. I think, you know, the ice is in pretty decent shape. I think, again, a few of the guys yesterday were saying, you know, they had heard a lot of the comments from post-game from the Devils and Rangers about how the ice on Sunday was not very good, and, you know, they had the delay for the glare, and I think also the ice was pretty brittle. So they felt like it was pretty good yesterday, but there were a few spots where it was a little soft, and you kind of have to be aware of those soft spots, but they got pretty familiar with some of the nooks and crannies of the outdoor rink. And no, I don't think we're looking at any delays. I think you know, having this game in the prime time start time here on the East Coast is this was kind of how it was designed to go off without a hitch at the right time. You know, there's no snow There's no glare. They've got the stadium lights on. They can calibrate that as much as they need to or as little as they need to. Everybody's got their eye black on, and I think we're ready to go.
Arthur, the Islanders right now are in 13th in the Eastern Conference and just trying to stay with that pack that's basically goes all the way up till 6th, really, in the Eastern Conference. There's a bunch of teams right now that are basically just trying to keep up with the pack, as I mentioned. For the Islanders going into this game, is it all about the win? Are they able to enjoy this at all, or are they just really wanting those 2 points so they can really stay with that pack and stay relevant in that Eastern Conference playoff race?
I think they were pretty happy to have the day yesterday with the practice. That was a decent pace practice, and then lots of family for a skate afterwards. You saw a lot of parents, a lot of spouses, a few kids. It's a very young team, so not a ton of children out there on the ice, but I think the enjoyment factor was there yesterday and kind of gotten out of the way, and they know where they are, and they know what this game and the four after it before the Olympic break mean, that they pretty much need points in all of them. They probably need 2 points in all of them to really still be in that conversation going into the break, because there's a lot of other, concerns with roster, with potential unrestricted free agents. At least one of them, Thomas Vanek, a pretty headline guy. So, there's a lot of things at stake, not just tonight, but going forward, and be able to win this divisional game and make it a 2-point game for them so that the Rangers don't continue to stay ahead of them and kind of stay in that conversation. They had three tough home games leading up to this, and they blew 2-goal leads in two of them. Got the controversial loss against St. Louis, where they only got 1 point, but they weren't very good on Monday against the Bruins, so they need to have something to kind of spark them, and maybe this pomp and circumstance of this game will be the thing that kind of rights the ship for them in the short term.
It's not a big concern necessarily, Arthur, but is there a little bit of a concern that the Islanders are at a disadvantage because the Rangers have already done this before and played on this ice surface and maybe know what to expect more so than the New York Islanders do?
Maybe. I think maybe the gamesmanship part of it says the Islanders would say that, and the Rangers might say, well, these guys are coming in fresher. They haven't had the cold weather game. The Rangers have been off for a couple of days, so, maybe there's a little bit more adrenaline flowing for the Islanders being out there for the first time. So I think it's more of a gamesmanship thing. I think most guys on both sides, this is a rivalry that produces some wacky games no matter where it's mm-hmm. played. So I think that part of it will probably take over. And, certainly there was a wacky game played here on Sunday between Rangers and Devils, the sort of game that you almost never see between those two teams, such a high-scoring, wide-open game. So, I think that the intensity of the rivalry and the specialness of the evening kind of takes precedence over who feels like they have an advantage or who's at a disadvantage going in.
And you mentioned that special feeling. The Islanders and Rangers played a great game, I guess it was about a week and a half ago. Caught most of that one, back and forth, a lot of intensity. Is there a genuine excitement in the area about this game, or is the Super Bowl just overshadowing it because that's so big?
I don't think that, to be perfectly honest, I think a Super Bowl between two teams that are from thousands of miles away, there's a certain amount of spectacle, and, some parts of New York City have kind of been converted into, Super Bowl event type areas, but I think the average sports fan is a local sports fan, and they want to see their local teams play, so I think this will do well TV ratings-wise. They sold it out. I don't know if they're going to get all 50,000-plus in here, but if you're close to it mm-hmm. on a Wednesday night at 7:30, that's a pretty impressive feat, so, I think the fact that we've got the Islanders and Rangers, and certainly as someone who covers the Islanders and hears from a lot of their fans, I think they feel like this is their one chance at something this special, and a lot of the fans were willing to make the trip in and populate Yankee Stadium and make sure their voices are heard, because these opportunities don't come around very much for this organization.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Arthur Staple. He's live at Yankee Stadium for the Stadium Series game between the Islanders and the Rangers, which gets underway in about 20 minutes' time, a game you can see on TSN. Arthur, we have to ask you about Islanders defenseman Travis Hamonic. He's been placed on IR with a concussion. How serious is this injury for him? Obviously, concussions are serious, but is this one that people are expecting to be a longer one, or is this one that they expect he'll be able to recover from relatively quickly?
It's already been, we're already over 2 weeks from when he got hurt in Dallas January 12th, and he came back, he was skating a little bit, he took a hard skate with the rest of his team on Monday morning, and I think he woke up still feeling the effects of it, so they figured putting him on IR, you know, if they could make room for Matt Donovan to come back up, was the smart thing to do in the short term with only five games left until the Olympic break. I think they wanted to guard against having to kind of wait him out and see what was going to happen. You know, like you said, these things are very tricky, and symptoms can be gone one day and back the next, and different symptoms from day to day. So, you know, he's a guy who's played through a lot of big hits and a lot of situations where somebody else might want to take a break. And I'm sure it's frustrating him. He was out here on Tuesday to watch his teammates practice. He had his mom and some other family members come in. He was very gung-ho about trying to, you know, thinking that getting out for this game tonight might be a possibility. So I'm sure he's very frustrated and, you know, as a very eager young guy to play and always trying to, you know, be a team leader, this has got to be doubly frustrating to not be here for this kind of signature event. So I think they're playing a bit of wait and see with this, and they don't want to fool around with any sort of concussion symptoms. They just got Lubo Vishnovsky back after missing 46 games with a concussion. So, you know, they're playing it safe, which is the right thing to do. And if he has to wait till after the Olympic break, then so be it. They're going to try to muddle through without one of their top defensemen, which they've had to do even before this happened. So it's a long part of the season.
Arthur, we've got one more question for you, because the Stadium Series game between the Rangers and the Islanders starts in about 15 to 20 minutes. So earlier this afternoon, you tweeted out that you spoke with Thomas Vanek's agent, Steve Bartlett, and he quoted and said, we're not there yet on the decision, that they were going to wait to see if they were going to re-sign with the Islanders. I guess the question is, do you think that that's going to be the case and he is going to wait, or do you think there's still a chance out there that he'll be moved before the trade deadline?
You know, we're getting down to you know, counting days till the Islanders really need an answer from him. And I think, you know, you don't want to read the tea leaves too much. Everybody on both sides seem to be saying the Islanders are trying to be patient. They're, of course, you know, Clark Snow is fielding calls from all around the league to kind of gauge the market for Thomas Vanek, as he has to do if the word comes from Steve Bartlett or from Vanek that he wants to go to July 1 and see what he can get. But, you know, as the days dwindle down, you know, he's trying to play and help his team win, and the team needs to get back in the playoff race. So you may not hear a lot of definitive words of yes or no on either side, just because we're kind of in an ongoing situation, and you've got the roster freeze coming on February 7th, so it's going to last over 2 weeks. So, you know, we're getting close down to it. My gut feeling tells me that he's going to want to go to July 1st. You know, he's a guy who's never been an unrestricted free agent. I think that's kind of a big mark for a big-time guy like him. So I would imagine that may happen. And if that's the word that comes from his side in the next couple of days, then I would imagine the Islanders really have no choice but to try to recoup some of the assets that they've traded away for him, you know, including Matt Molson in a first-round draft pick. So, yeah, I think right now, I was probably at 50-50 a few days ago, but as the days go on and there's less and less of an answer, I'd imagine we're leaning more towards the possibility of him being moved before the March 5th deadline.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday on Long Island. Arthur, thanks very much for doing this evening, and, you know, if you need any hints on staying warm while being outside, just, you know, send us a direct message on Twitter.
I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Arthur. Take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, we talk about the Jets-Preds game from last night.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to our good friend Arthur Staple from Newsday for joining us live from Yankee Stadium, where the Stadium Series game between the Yankees and the Rangers and the Islanders will get underway in about 10 minutes time, a game you can see on TSN. You know, and we're not going to talk too much about the game, but I, you know, for me, the visuals of the game at night are better than the visuals with the game during the daytime. I think it just looks better on television with the nighttime sky in the background. So I think it'll be some good visuals coming out of Yankee Stadium today. I'm also looking forward to the one at Soldier Field between Pittsburgh and Chicago, because I think that'll provide some great visuals as well.
It's all for visuals because the game sucks.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know. That's all it is. Exactly right. The game sucks. The pace of play is terrible. It's not a regular NHL hockey game.
The Stadium Series is for Instagram.
I believe this is the first game at night, too.
No, there was another game that got delayed late enough.
But
wasn't
this is
there?
Like the first late night start. Like
first late night start.
Yeah, there was one, right. But wasn't one of the Winter Classic New Year's Day games.
Pushed into like the evening, but this is like literally, you know, starting at night. So
Penguins Capitals?
I don't remember whichever game it was, but there was one game that I remember they kept pushing back, and I think
it was Pens Caps.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Anyways, little games on TSN if you want to watch that. And then following that, a great game going to be played on regular ice surface, the Chicago Blackhawks and the Vancouver Canucks tonight on TSN.
Yeah, and a game, Chicago loses to Calgary last night in OT.
Yeah.
And they're struggling right now. They haven't been very good over the past 10, 12 games.
Yeah, they haven't won in regulation in four, Richie.
Yeah, and a Vancouver team, you're going to be seeing, obviously, a big game against Chicago tonight for them. It's always a big game between those two teams. And then a Vancouver team heading over here for the first time and the last team that the Jets haven't yet faced at home. So, should be interesting. And the Canucks can't score. I mean, they just cannot score. There's nothing else to say. Daniel Sedin hasn't scored in 12 games, I believe it said on TSN. And the whole team just can't do anything. Chris Tanev broke his thumb. Reportedly, he's out till the Olympic break,
yeah,
or through the Olympic break. So rough times right now in Vancouver. And obviously, Coach Tortorella, as his buddy there, is not going to be in town because he's suspended.
That's right. And we'll talk about the Jets-Canucks game coming up a little bit later on in the show around the 6:45 hour. I want to look back last night at the Jets-Predators game. A game, the Jets flying high after a tremendously successful week last week when they win 3 out of 4 games against some pretty talented competition, especially the wins in Anaheim and Chicago. And then last night, I mean, you knew that the emotional level wasn't going to be there just because it's a Tuesday night against Nashville, in January. But to lose that game on home ice, it's just one of those losses that you look back at the end of the season. If you fall a couple points short of the playoffs, I don't think they're going to get that close. But it's one of those games you look back on and say, a game we had to have at home ice that we couldn't afford to lose, and they lost last night 4-3.
You mentioned the emotional level, and I guess on a Tuesday night at home against a team that is not really in a playoff position right now, okay, maybe the emotional level isn't high. To me, that wasn't really the main issue yesterday. Andrei Pavlik did not play well. I think everybody will admit that he didn't have a good game, and we can't be too hard on him because he absolutely stole the game against the Anaheim Ducks, and we talked about that last week, and he kept them in there against the San Jose Sharks. So Andrei Pavlik, over the last couple of weeks, really has been playing probably the best that he's played all year. And he struggled, and we saw Al Montoya come in for 3 straight games there. And I think that, this is going off on a little tangent, but I do think that Al Montoya deserves consideration to start Friday, coming off of that excellent game against the Chicago Blackhawks. If Al Montoya doesn't stand on his head against the Chicago Blackhawks, the Jets aren't in that game. And I think it deserves to be mentioned here. And I know people, every time they hear, Al Montoya is going to start, it's a goalie controversy. No, it just means that Andrei Pavlik is struggling and Al Montoya happens to be coming off of a good game. Now, going back to that game, the Jets simply got outworked and they didn't put together anything close, Richie, to a full game there. They got those goals, 27 seconds apart, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. Mark Scheifele's goal was a beautiful goal from a bad angle, and Blake Wheeler's goal was kind of a fluky goal where popped up and went over Carter Hutton's head, but the Jets really didn't put together really a good period there, especially the second period, Richie. Mm-hmm. The Nashville Predators badly outplayed them, and you look at Seth Jones' goal there. Pavlik is slow to get over. Roman Josi's goal, he's out of position. Sure, it was a nice passing play, but he's still way out of position, and it was a given goal.
I can't blame Pavlik for that. Josi, it's a four-way passing play. I mean, if you want to blame guys for that goal, I think there's other guys you blame before Pavlik on that one.
Well, that's right. I mean, sure, the defensive coverage wasn't good there, but I think Andrei Pavlik, his ability to read that play, he really did overcommit. But let's just say that those two goals as a whole weren't very good goals. They didn't really make it. They made it easy on the Nashville Predators, to put it that way, on those two goals. And then the goal early by Mike Fisher was obviously a killer. And the Winnipeg Jets really have had trouble against the Predators this year. We've seen them come in before. Carter Hutton, I believe, got a shutout earlier in the season. I know that he was in net. But it was one of those games where, it was a one-goal game. I mean, you can't say it was a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. They didn't play very well. And you can talk all you want about the emotional level. But really, the top line wasn't going. There was no line really going. I mean, 2 goals in 27 seconds, Richie. You take those 2 goals out of it, there was barely any offense in the game. I think we were talking about this up in the press box last night. There's maybe half a dozen decent scoring chances. I thought Mark Scheifele was one of the best players on the ice for either team. But for the most part, it wasn't one of their best performances. They're still, in a position where they've won 6 out of 8. Things are trending in the right direction. That game, you have to look at and you have to say, okay, well, there are some bad habits that have crept back, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take off, if they're going to have to go 20-8 before last night, or 19-9, whatever it is, if it's 20-8, they have to go 20-7 now. So it's a game you can't lose at home. Nashville, you think you're better than them, you're a point ahead of them in the standings. They don't have Pekka Rinne. I know you don't have Evander Kane, but I think Nashville's base, their strategy is based more on Pekka Rinne than the Jets and Evander Kane, and that doesn't mean Kane's not an important part of the team. They didn't win, and they played, I thought, the first period had a good pace. Second period, they came out flat. They had that, obviously, that success in that short period of time to tie it up. Came out flat, not flat, but they weren't able to kill off the penalty in the third period, which leads to the goal, and they didn't generate a ton of offense. You know, as you mentioned, Andrew Ladd, Little, and Frolik certainly wasn't their best game. That's Scheifele at spurts. I thought he's played better lately, but that's how good he's been. Wheeler was really good. Thorburn did what he could. The Okunin line was awful. Buffalo was terrible. Setoguchi, I don't know how he even gets on the ice.
He gets on the ice to go take a penalty that ends up being the game-winning goal.
That's right, and that's what he does. And, you know, he worked a couple of shifts hard for a couple shifts after. People said, fine. But penalty, well, he's angry at Weber. Devin Setoguchi, they have no other options. They have nobody else to put on, and that's why he's playing left wing. That's one of the reasons he's playing left wing. That's one of the reasons.
Natural right
winger. Chris Thorburn is playing left wing too.
Yep. Also a natural right winger.
Yeah.
Good point.
And so that's, you know, an issue. And then you have the fourth line, which Maurice didn't play at all last night. Really. Devin said you're just terrible. You need to get him off there, but they have no other options. They can't call. There's nobody to call up, guys. I mean, that's the problem, and that's the problem that Claude Noel had too. I mean, you look down the bench and there's no bodies there, right? So when these guys aren't going, you have no option. Devin Setoguchi ought not have been playing for the past 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but they have nobody else to put in. The guy came to camp out of shape. He takes shifts off. He's been terrible. Takes a terrible penalty last night. He's been the biggest passenger they've had and doesn't seem to care. And they're going to get rid of him. They're going to get rid of him. It's a matter of time. But maybe he can contribute something before he goes.
Well, as far as Devin Setoguchi goes, this is his first year, obviously, on the Winnipeg Jets, and he was acquired for a specific role. It was for scoring on that second line right wing, and we know that he's been bumped down to the third line. Richie mentioned it. Now he's playing left wing because, of course, Dustin Byfuglien is now playing right wing on that line. Dustin Byfuglien, they've decided, is better suited because he's making that transition. And right now, Devin Setoguchi, I'm not sure if he doesn't realize that you know, at any point he could be traded because he's not someone I think that we'd agree that factors into the long-term plans at this point.
He doesn't care if he gets traded. He doesn't want to be here. He's made that abundantly clear by the way he's performed on the ice this year.
I agree with that.
His decision yesterday was the timing of it and just the circumstances were really troubling because, again, the Winnipeg Jets have won, well, going into that game, had won 6 of 7 games. And they're in a position, even though teams have been struggling, they're still in mathematically in the playoff race. Now, you can say whatever the chances are, the Jets, they're still trying to win games
here.
The Jets are still trying to win
games.
And, Drew, you mentioned that's why I don't disagree with you that maybe the emotional level isn't there. But that's why I always argued that a coach of a team is never, ever, of any sport, going to say that, oh, well, that was one of the, what we didn't really get up for. I mean,
I don't think
you get up for every game, Richie.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the Jets didn't show up last night. The first period had a good pace. I thought it was a game against Nashville, which is harder to get up for than a Hockey Night in Canada game against the Leafs. But I didn't think the Jets didn't show. They just didn't play their best. But some guys no-showed. And that's the problem you have. You know, I mean, the team as a whole, I thought they played hard. Sometimes you play hard and don't win.
Well, sometimes you just don't have the same, you know, levels in your, you know, the same level in your gas tank as you do in other games.
And let's, before we get, I want to talk about Buffalo in a second, but before we get to that, I mean, let's give credit where credit's due, guys. Nashville played a good game yesterday. They played hard. They skated hard. They forechecked hard. Their defense is nice, up, young, and up and coming. I thought they played a nice game. And Hutton made some nice saves. A nice save off Wheeler when he turned Seth Jones inside out. So I have to say that I don't want to just discredit the Jets here. You know, it was a tough loss. Stupid penalty, obviously, that leads to that power play opportunity. But another thing I want to talk about is Dustin Byfuglien. And he had some interesting comments after the game last night with respect to playing forward as opposed to defense. I think Remus has him ready.
The big topic, obviously, for you has been defenseman to forward. You've done this now for a little while. How has that transition continued to go with your line mates, and how do you feel it is right now?
It's good. I mean, forward's such an up and down, you know, game playing up there, it's tough to stay with it. Each game's different, and that's what you got to get over right away. It's tough to always stay in the rhythm when some games like tonight, our line, I thought we chased it a lot, and we didn't have much puck control, but we worked hard and we did a good job, and we didn't get many shots, but I thought we played pretty good as a line.
We saw in the third period, especially you and Setoguchi had a shift in there where you were in bang around and wreaking some havoc there on the Predators. Are you enjoying the hitter and not the hit E right now?
I can't say I'm enjoying it, but I'll just do what I got to do to help this team out best I can, and would I like to be on the back end? Yes, but right now I'm playing forward, and I'll just go out there and do what I have to do.
What do you think of Bufflin's comments right there, Richie?
Well, one thing I want to qualify first off is that when you ask a player a question and he's honest with you, you have to respect that.
Absolutely, that's all we ever ask for in the media.
And he's honest, and I think that just confirms for some people who maybe aren't aware, he wants to play defense, and there's really no doubt about it. Him on forward right now in the shape he's in is difficult, but I still think for this team it makes the most sense. I do think that. He needs to get in shape. I think he gets in shape by playing forward, but usually that's for training camp. That's the situation we're in right now. You wonder, that line. You also have to point this out, guys. Bufflin on forward, he's obviously has a speed issue and getting in on the forecheck and things like that. He's also playing with Devin Setoguchi and Ole Okunin in here. All right, so let's not get crazy. He can play with different forwards and he can look a lot better as well. And if he doesn't like it, so be it. He's playing it. And I think Paul Maurice, I think there's a bit of you enable him a bit when you put him back on D based on the construction of the roster, meaning you're trying to appease one player, I think, at the cost of the team. Because the thing about this, guys, Kane's injured. You pull Bufflin on a forward. Then you got Thorburn and somebody else in your top nine. It's not good, right? All due respect to Chris Thorburn. I like, great in the room. He's a fourth line guy. Plays hard. Hits. Scored a goal last night. But the point is, you can't have two guys who are fourth line guys in your top nine. That's been a problem for the Jets. So based on the construction of the roster right now, to me it makes the most sense to have it up there. And I don't criticize Dustin Bufflin for being honest. You know what? You ask him a question, he gives you an answer.
And he doesn't talk that often. So when he does, and he's honest, it's all the better.
Yeah.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets forward group, and we'll talk about the Evander Kane injury. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com, talking about the Winnipeg Jets, their forward lines, and everything else in between. Obviously, the forward lines took a big blow when Evander Kane was revealed that his hand has an infection in it, and it swelled up after the Chicago game on Sunday night, and he is going to be out until the Olympic break. He won't play any of the next five games, six if you included last night. So the Jets will be without one of their best scorers in Evander Kane for the next couple weeks at the very least. Obviously it's a significant injury. Is it an injury that's going to ultimately prevent the Winnipeg Jets from getting back into the playoff race?
It definitely doesn't help, and it's tough to answer that question because there's obviously a bunch of players on this team that can pick up the slack offensively, but he's a 30-goal scorer. Sure, he's only scored 30 goals once, but he was on pace last year, and he's right around there this year. He started to pick it up lately, and we saw the hand injury, and it's from the fight that he had with Eric Brewer from that Tampa Bay game. Wasn't the best fight, but he caught something, and a cut is now infected, and I know we were showing it on TSN 1290 radio, the Twitter page. He Instagrammed the hand, and it looks pretty bad right now. And hopefully, after the Olympics, he is able to come back. But it absolutely doesn't help. And Remus and I were actually looking at the record of the Winnipeg Jets, when Kane is out. It's actually 500. You'd expect it probably to be a losing record. So you don't want to read too much into that right now. So they've been able to pick up the slack when Kane went down earlier in the season. But needless to say, he's a big part of the offense. After that top line, Kane's been a staple on that second line. And as soon as you take Kane out of there. Now you're plugging in a guy in there. And Richie's right. Chris Thorburn deserves tons of credit. He's done that. He did that on the road, if you remember, when Kane wasn't part of that road trip earlier, and he was contributing and doing a really good job. But Chris Thorburn can't be your permanent left wing player on the second line there.
And
he does an admirable job in that role. He's one of those guys, Chris Thorburn, as Richie mentioned, one of the most popular guys in the dressing room. And when he's asked to do something, he'll do that. And he's more of a guy that will play on the fourth line, drop the gloves, score the occasional goal. But right now, you have to address that because you have five games, as you mentioned, left, Drew, before the Olympic break here, and you're still trying to pull out wins. You've got Vancouver coming up and Montreal on Sunday. That's not going to be an easy game. They haven't been very good in Montreal. Montreal's another team, Richie, that's really struggling. They're not keeping pace with the top teams.
Big win last night, though.
They did get a big win. Yeah. And you know, they're going to be hungry, and as I mentioned, the Jets haven't had a good record against the Habs dating back to that first ever Jets 2.0 game. But it's terrible, and you'd have to think, well,
beat them, period?
I think they've beat them once or twice, but it's a losing record. I don't have the stat on me, but it's not good. Maybe Reem can pull that up for us or add that up.
I don't think they have beaten the Habs. I'm trying to think a game when they would have
beat them once, and Andrea with the Okunin scored a goal, I think, in that game. In any event,
I think it was a road game. Richie, yeah, in any event, the point is that
Kane,
it's a huge injury, and unfortunately it comes in a fight, and I think people are saying, well, the team didn't like it. I don't think for a second, especially when you're named after Evander Holyfield, I don't think that for any second that's going to change Kane's game at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it changes Kane's game. Maybe they don't want him fighting as much. He's still got, it's the emotion of the game. He got into it. So be it. It's what happens sometimes. You know, you just get injured, and it's a freak incident with the infection. Sometimes it just does where it was on the knuckle, all that stuff.
Right, and the medical staff purposely kept him out of the lineup for that reason. So it was an unfortunate situation, and now because of that, he's not going to be able to play here until the end of February. But as far as replacing that offense, Evander Kane was just starting to get going, and he's had some of his best games here over the last couple of weeks since he came back from the original fight. I believe it was the January 7th game against the Tampa Bay Lightning when he was originally injured in that fight with Eric Brewer. So it's not going to be easy to replace that offense. But again, that means that some players right now that are trying to compete for spots on the team next year, because there's only 28 games left now. So are you going to elevate a guy?
27.
27 games left. So
who can elevate? Nobody.
Well, it's going to be a situation where who are you going to put in that left wing spot? Is it going to be Eric O'Dell?
Let me get on there. It's another problem. They don't have any left wingers. Who are the left wingers they have on this roster right now? Andrew Ladd.
Halaschuk is out. He's a left winger.
Right. He's injured. So Andrew, but right now, currently, without injuries, Andrew Ladd, James Wright, Eric Tingrady. I mean, just think about that for a second. They don't have any left wingers. They haven't had a third-line left winger all year.
And, Richie, you have to wonder.
They didn't sign one in free agency, and they knew that going in. I mean, Halaschuk was not your third-line left winger. He was your fourth-liner. You signed him to a two-way deal. You hoped he'd be better than that.
Yeah, third-line or right.
But you don't sign a third-line guy to a two-way deal, right?
Yeah.
You don't do that.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, they had options out there, and they didn't sign them. So look at it now. You lose Kane. What do you have? You don't have a second line right winger, who really is your talent wise probably your first line because Ladd struggled. But Ladd's, you know, you could argue first, second, whatever. The point is they have nobody to take that spot. And how do you replace that offense? You probably can't. Now you hope that he comes back. You know, the Olympic break is fortuitous, in terms of timing. You'll lose him for six games, right? But you can't really tread water here, because if you do and you go 3-2, you're getting rid of your losses that you have. If you go, you need to go 20-7. Evander Kane does this for you, as he's able to take off that first. You know, he can play against the first or second line defense pairing, takes the pressure off the other players, takes attention off of Scheifele and Wheeler, does a ton of things.
Great possession player.
Well, great. Quick goal scorer.
Right.
I mean, this team doesn't have a lot of natural goal scorers, and he's one of them.
Yep.
And sure, he has his limitations, and we've documented those at length. But it's a big injury.
Yep.
A bad time.
And as we know, over the last 2 years, first year not so much, but the last 2 years he plays penalty kill. He'll go out there on the power play. So you're absolutely right. And you mentioned Eric Tangrady, who hasn't been in the lineup, I believe, for almost 3 weeks now. He's been a healthy scratch.
Nobody there.
He was injured. So you might wonder, is Setoguchi going to come out of the lineup? I'm not saying that he is. I'm saying you'd have to wonder the way he's played. Has he really become a favorite of Paul Maurice? I can't see him being in Paul Maurice's great books after that penalty and the way he's played, because he hasn't been producing that much offensively.
Never mind the penalty against Toronto that easily could have that could have cost them in that game when, you know, he flipped the puck off the backhand over the glass in his own zone with absolutely no pressure on him, resulting in that delay of game.
You have to wonder if they do this. You have to wonder if, because of the left wing, I know Frolik really likes to play the right side. You wonder if maybe they throw Frolik. I know Thorburn played there yesterday. I'm just tossing out ideas here. But Frolik would be moved over to the left side of Wheeler and Scheifele, and they maybe throw Bothlin up there with Little and Ladd. Something to think about, maybe.
Yeah, or they maybe even, kind of similar, they put the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line back together and put Bufflin on the second line.
I don't think they're going to move Scheifele and Wheeler apart right now. I think that's a good combination.
Yeah, it is very possible that they try to keep... It's... Ladd and Little are almost inseparable on this team over the last 3 years. But, you know, just based on the line. So they will have to do something because, again, nobody loves Chris Thorburn more than I do, but you're now going to have to look at this. This is the next five games here. What's the plan here with what you've got? Because we know that Paul Postma was reassigned to the St. John's Ice Caps. So we know that he's coming off. Halaschuk, Slater, they're a little bit away. So really... It's who are you going to move? Are you going to put Tangredi in that position? Are you going to elevate someone to the second line? Use Tangredi on the third or fourth line?
Well, also,
they've got to make a decision that isn't just about the Friday game. It's about the next couple weeks.
That's what I'm saying. So if you put Bufflin up with Little and Ladd, then you can put Sediguchi on the right wing with Jokinen and put whoever you want on the left side, like Reiter, Tangredi, probably Tangredi.
You load up your top six is what you do.
Exactly. And then you have Scheifele, Frolik on his, even though it's his left side and he's a left-handed shooting guy, he likes to play the right wing. And then on the right, you have Wheeler. And you ride your horses. And he's already proven he's going to ride his horses. Look at last night's game, the way he played the fourth line. He's going to ride the horses.
4 minutes and change for most of the guys on the fourth line yesterday.
I think something to think about. Because they can't keep putting Thorburn on the left wing. It's not fair. It's not fair to him. Obviously, it's a great opportunity for him. He just can't do it. And with due respect.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the Jets-Canucks game on Friday at MTS Center. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, talking about the Winnipeg Jets' disappointing performance last night at MTS Center, of course, losing to the Nashville Predators, but they get an opportunity to get right back on the horse come Friday evening as the Winnipeg Jets and the Vancouver Canucks will square off, the Canucks making their first visit to MTS Center since the Winnipeg Jets returned.
It was a disappointing game in the sense that they didn't win, obviously, but somewhere, I'm not sure where he's living right now, but somewhere, Darren Quint was smiling. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, YouTube Darren Quint, 1995, two fastest goals in Winnipeg Jets history.
8 seconds.
I think it was four.
Was it four?
I thought it was six or seven.
Let's say it's 6 seconds.
Okay.
Maybe Reem can tweet it from the Illegal Curve account. And I'm going to put you guys on the spot. It was against the Edmonton Oilers.
4 seconds.
Edmonton Oilers, don't look this up.
4 seconds.
Who was in goal for the Edmonton Oilers in 1995 when Darren Quint scored those goals? If you guys get this.
It wasn't Devin Dubnyk, was it?
Well, it was 1995.
Okay. That was the year before Cujo,
Dubnyk was
right?
Probably pretty young then.
Freddie Brathwaite?
No, it wasn't Freddie
Pokey
Brathwaite.
Redick?
No, it wasn't. Did Pokey ever play for the Oilers? It was Joaquin Gage.
Oh. Wow.
I looked it up on YouTube today. So.
What does that have to do with last night's game at all?
I was just saying that was, you know, those fast, there was 3 goals in 82 seconds, and then Blake Wheeler and Scheifele scored 27 seconds apart. So that was one of the good parts of that game. You know, the victory didn't come,
Let's not talk anymore about scoring in 4 seconds. Keep going.
I just want to talk about Darren Quint. I don't know if you know this or not, but
he's still playing. Yeah, in the KHL, right?
Yeah, he's like in the tops. Like, what was he on the roster? He actually got points this year.
I didn't know that he still played, Reem.
A lot of people talk about the KHL as if it's some amazing league. You look at the top scorers in the league, and they're all these washed-up NHL guys.
Well, I mean, Darren Quint, I mean, like as he said, that was how many years ago, and he's still doing well in the KHL. Good for him.
17 years ago.
Well, good for him, but
18 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. Anyways, the Jets and the Canucks on Friday night at MTS Center. Another game that the Jets have to win. I mean, you know, like you said, Richard, the Jets are chasing the Canucks for the final playoff spots. The Canucks are not the juggernaut that they were the last, you know, number of years. They're a team that doesn't score very much and hasn't really been playing that all that well. So, you know, how do the Jets win that game on Friday night? What's the key there?
Well, you mentioned that they haven't been scoring, and Richie touched on Daniel Sedin. Last week, Henrik Sedin's Ironman streak finally came to an end. It was 500-plus games, might have even been 600-plus games. Now he's been out for four games. Daniel Sedin can't score, as Richie mentioned. Ryan Kesler has really gone into the tank. Earlier this season, Ryan Kesler at times was playing right wing with the Sedins, but he's usually now in that second line center role. And right now, they have a team right now, and you have no one to go to. And we know how the Sedins rely on each other, Richie. And Daniel Sedin's a good enough player that he can usually overcome that. But Alexander Burrows has only played 22 games. He hasn't scored a goal this year.
It's unbelievable.
David Booth, I'm sure if they could move David Booth, they would. And a guy that I think is really intriguing, for two guys that are very intriguing for the Vancouver Canucks. This is getting a little bit off topic here, but you got to look at Thomas Vanek. And then we've heard Mike Camilleri could possibly be going to Vancouver, but LA and Detroit are very interested in Michael Camilleri. But as far as beating the Vancouver Canucks, this scoring drought is really only something recent. They were playing pretty well there, and now they've really fallen out of it, still holding on to that eighth and final playoff spot in the West. But the Vancouver Canucks are still a very good defensive team. They're maybe not the defensive team that they were in 2011, but just start with Dan Hamhuis, who's named to the Olympic team, excellent defenseman. And Richie mentioned Tanev is out right now. Still a very good defensive team, and still really good in goal. But it's a team right now that you have to think that if you score a couple goals against this team, you might win the game, because nobody's putting the puck in the net for them right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it as Ian, you know, Kessler, Jordan Schrader's a guy they've
scored a couple goals.
Yeah, rely on now a guy played with Cassian and Booth for a period of last game, and when you look at some of the other guys they have on their top nine, Brad Richardson, a respectable player. Again, you know, saying of the Thorburn thing, he's better than Thorburn talent wise, but in LA didn't want to lose him. But if he's playing with Sedin and Burrows, you know, that's a concern. That's a big concern scoring wise. Higgins and Hansen are guys playing with Kesler. You know, they've had spurts, but Hansen's ideally your third line right winger, and Christopher Higgins I've never loved, but I mean, he played well there a couple of years ago. Is he really your second line left winger? No. I mean, to me, on a good team, he's not. On a really good team. So you have Richardson, Higgins, Hansen, and then you're relying on Booth, Cassian, and Schrader, all guys who have talent. I mean, that could be a line maybe that does something for them. But they can't create offense. Obviously, having Sedin out is not an easy thing. You look at their back end, there's talent. You look at their goaltending, there's talent. So it's not an easy game. They haven't been playing that well. Obviously, their coach isn't there, so there are distractions. It's not an easy game. But what you do against the Canucks is you want them, you know, they play a Tortorella-type style, right? It's more of a defensive style. It's more get in the way. It's a hard game. It's not the puck possession game that they played under Alain Vigneault. If you can get three goals, you're going to probably beat them. And the Jets have been able to, you know, create some offense and use their speed against teams. And I think Vancouver's guys, you know, some of their depth players can skate. Some of their top guns aren't necessarily the best skaters. And on the back end, the Tanev injury is important. And that's when you get to talking about, again, guys, nine forwards. That's why the Kane injury is so big. Because you look at Vancouver, you lose Tanev. When your top four, you know, your top six is not as deep, right?
Chris Tanev, the Canucks defenseman, out with a broken thumb.
He's an underrated player, and so what happens now is a team like the Jets, who's rolling with three lines, who had guys who could score on all of them, now have to change their lineup a bit, and one player creates a fairly significant hole, and you can't take advantage of that lack of depth as you may have been able to a few days ago.
Yeah, and I think tomorrow's game, you mentioned Zach Cassian, Sestito, they've got some guys that like to rough it up a little bit. I don't expect tomorrow's game to... We've seen some high-scoring games at the MTS Center lately, 9 goals in that Toronto game, and even 7 goals in last night's game. between the Jets and the Predators, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think Richie's right. You're going to see a pretty gritty game between these two teams, and we're not sure if Luongo or Lack is playing, but either way, both of those goalies are playing really well, and you can't expect to score a lot of goals on either of those goaltenders. And this is another big win for the Jets, because now you're facing a different type of adversity. The first loss, that's one thing. You lost to a very good team in the San Jose Sharks, but now you've lost a game where you're starting to see a little bit of the old Jets creep in, and that they're struggling to score goals, and the emotional level is a little bit, you know, decreased. I know we've been talking a lot about the Maurice magic, but okay, so now you've won 6 out of 8 games with Paul Maurice as the head coach. Now what are you going to do now? Because there's no more excuses when you're playing teams like the Nashville Predators and the Vancouver Canucks. They're pretty equal with you skill level wise. And it's you know, really, you know, difficult to say that as far as the Canucks are concerned, but the Canucks, they have lots of problems. Sure, they're top heavy. The Sedins and Kessler are still world-class players, but after that, we've gone through the lineup. A guy like David Booth just really hasn't worked out. He was given a lot of money to play there, acquired from the Florida Panthers. So really, this is one of those games that's going to be low scoring, I think, and a really tight game, and it's a game that they should be able to take. Do they go back to Pavlik is the big question for me. Because I think Al Montoya deserves to be considered to start the way he played against Chicago.
What do you think they do, Rich? Do you think they go with Pavlik, or do you think they go with Montoya?
That's a good question, Drew. I think he goes with Pavlik. I think there's two ways to look at it, and I think the one way to look at it is you got to go based on who's performing best. The other way is you have to also probably lean on the guy that you want to rely on long-term. And is there a long-term component to what Paul Maurice is thinking? I mean, you could say, oh, he doesn't have a contract pass this year, although I think he'll eventually get one. I think that's a formality, frankly. Short-term, he wants to make the playoffs, and he wants the best chance to win. I think there's a bit of both. I think he has to mix up those priorities. Obviously, he wants to win every game. I'm just saying in terms of, you know, in the back of his mind. I think Pavlik gets the start, and I think if Pavlik doesn't play well, and again, you're getting rid of another loss that you can't really afford to, especially this is the team that's closest to you in the standings in terms of the wild card, the team you're chasing right now, 63 points, you're 8 points back. I think it goes to Pavlik, and if Pavlik doesn't win, I think Montoya starts on Sunday. I don't think Montoya starts on Friday, although I'd have no issue with it at all.
Generally speaking, I mean, Paul Maurice's history as a head coach is that he rides the guy he perceives to be his number one goaltender. So far, that seems to be Pavlik.
I think we're looking at that as an outdated situation in the NHL now. Look at the St. Louis Blues. Yaroslav Halak is getting the majority of the starts, but they're not afraid to go to Brian Elliott, let's say 30 to 40 times a year. I really think...
But Halak's not that good, is he? And maybe you say that about Pavlik. I mean, you know, you could argue they're definitely comparable goalies, I think.
There's an argument to be made that they're, you know,
I think people prefer Halak, Ezzy, but I think,
well, then that if you take the argument that he's better under because of the defense in front of him, then yeah.
I bet he's been better, obviously, in Montreal, too. Good defense there. But the point is, they'd say he's better. But if you put a goaltender like that in a really insulated environment, he might perform better. The point is, if Halak was that good, Hitchcock wouldn't go to Elliott all the time, because Elliott isn't that good.
Let's go to break. We'll find out, coming up in the next day or so, who the Winnipeg Jets will start on Friday. In the meantime, you're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. You can listen to us online at tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 10 minutes into the first period at Yankee Stadium. Looks like every other outdoor game. Puck is bouncing, passes are hard to make, and it's 0-0 between the Rangers and the Islanders. Two other games still to come tonight in the NHL. San Jose visits Edmonton, where one of the better teams plays one of the weaker teams, but the Blackhawks and the Flames proved that that's why you play the game last night. And speaking of the Blackhawks, they go into Vancouver. They're the second half of the doubleheader on TSN. The Blackhawks and the Canucks will get underway at 9:30 local time. It's time to go for six things we learned this week.
Six.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
I'll start today with Richard Pollock. Richard, Barry Trotz has been extremely honest about his team's injury troubles, specifically Pekka Rinne, and this refreshing honesty has insulated his players from much of the blame for a poor season.
We talked about honesty in terms of Dustin Byfuglien in the first hour of the show, Drew, and I think if you hear Barry Trotz, and we were fortunate enough to interview him on Monday when we were filling in Hustler and Lawless, and he said, you know, if maybe we'd have 10 more points if Pekka Rinne was playing. Most coaches don't say that, guys. Most coaches don't admit that injuries are a reason for lack of success. And I think one of the reasons he's doing that, and maybe the main reason, is because he wants to insulate his younger players. You have Seth Jones. Now you have Delzotto. Guys have been playing in the league for a little bit here. But the point is, you have young guys that went to what you don't want to do. You're basically saying, okay, I'm not going to blame the young core we have and maybe the lack of talent up front on the fact that we haven't got it done, because I know that our team is constructed in such a way where we create offense on the back end can skate, the forwards pressure on the forecheck and create offense off of aggressiveness and getting in quick, because they don't have the talent, and he'll really admit that too, to sustain it shift after shift after shift of skill. So what he's doing then is he's basically saying, you know, it's been unfortunate, but we haven't had our whole crew, and when we have our whole crew, I think we have a pretty good shot. And hey, I think he's right.
There's a chance that Pekka Rinne doesn't come back this year.
Yeah.
Five.
Ezra Ginsberg, shockingly, starting with something you learned about the New Jersey Devils, you say that Devil center Adam Henrique has developed into an excellent defensive forward, and it has made him a more valuable player to his team.
He's had a tough year this year. He's only got 26 points in 54 mm-hmm. games this year. And, you know, Adam Henrique was given a contract from the Devils, and he was an unsigned player. And now he's a big part of that team. And Zajac has struggled this year. Adam Henrique has become a very good penalty killer for the New Jersey Devils. He's got three game winners, and he's got some power play goals. But I've been watching Adam Henrique lately, and he's really developed that aspect of his game. And that's something that he's got to be for the New Jersey Devils, because the New Jersey Devils right now are depending a lot on Jager, Eliash. Uh-huh. Brunner's started to play a little bit better now. But leading up until probably the last couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, Zajac wasn't going. Now he's starting to play a little bit better. But Henrique, for a guy that came into the league with 51 points, he didn't have a good year last year, but he still got a contract. He's a smaller guy. But that aspect of his game is something that's really nice to watch him develop, because he's a big part of the Devils' future there. You look at the team, and we've talked about this before, they're going to have a decent salary cap situation. But when you talk about Jager, Eliash, Zubras, the core of the team for the last, really, well, Eliash, 15 years, but he's a young part of that team along with Zajac, and I think, you know, it's nice to see him, because a lot of people look at Henrique and say, oh, he's struggling, he's only got 24 points, 26 points, but it's really nice to see him develop that aspect of his game.
Four.
Back to Richard Pollock. Richard, Morgan Rielly is a dynamic young defenseman that will flourish if Toronto doesn't rush his development.
Very few defensemen can skate blue line to blue line like Morgan Rielly can shoot it like he can pass the puck out of their own zone like Morgan Rielly can. I mean, he is a dynamic player, Drew. But you don't want him to fall prey to what many other Leafs prospects have fallen prey to, and that's pressure, and that's being forced into the lineup too quickly. I know with Kadri, they brought him back down to the AHL, they brought him back up. There are now some, you know, he might be run out of town, or he might be traded, whatever it may be. Morgan Rielly will be a great player if the Leafs fans allow him to be a great player, and the brass. And by that I mean fail. Learn from those failures. Understand how to get better. And then if he does that, he'll be just fine. He'll be a top two defender, I think, in the National Hockey League for a long time. But defense is hard to learn. There will be growing pains, and it can't all happen at once. And they've run more than their fair share of players out of town, and good players out of town. And I think Randy Carlyle has done a nice job so far of insulating Rielly. And I mean, he's picked on, but he's been harder on Jake Gardner. I think that's an attitude issue. And I think so far so good. But they don't want to screw it up, because they got something good there.
And Richie, when you talk about Morgan Rielly, you can't have another situation like Luke Shen. Morgan Riley's too young to move him like they did with Luke Shen.
Well, Luke
and
Shen
that trade and that trade is looking really bad right now because James Van Riemsdyk is having a career year and is arguably the MVP of that team right now.
Yeah, the trade's looking bad for Philadelphia,
you mean. For Philadelphia.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. 3.
Sticking with the Toronto Maple Leafs, Ezra, you say that Maple Leafs forward Nazem Kadri deserves a lot of credit for the way he has responded in the face of the various trade rumors and criticism being leveled at him.
I remember when we were previewing this season, and I picked the Leafs to make the playoffs, but I said that Nazem Kadri, don't expect him to be a point-per-game player. He had 44 points in 48 games, something like that last year, and it was a great rookie year, and he was a huge part of that team that almost got to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. In between late December and January 18th, he went 11 games without a goal, and then the trade rumors started to surface about Nazem Kadri out of Toronto. Well, Nazem Kadri was asked to play first-line center when Tyler Bozak went out, and it's a role that he's not ready for at this point in his career. He's 23 years old, but he was a guy that really just established himself last year, but good for him. He's got 9 points in his last 7 games, 3 goals, 6 assists. And for Nazem Kadri, not only was there the trade talk, but there was a lot of criticism, the relationship between Carlisle and Kadri.
It's not great, I don't think.
We talked to Michael Tracos about that. It's not a good relationship. But right now, in that media pressure cooker that is Toronto, Kadri's taken a lot of heat, and he's stepped his game up. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
And we talked about Setoguchi kind of playing like he wants out of town. Well, Kadri's playing like he doesn't want out of town. He's from London, doesn't want to get traded from Toronto, likes playing there, and he's showing it.
I think Kadri has a really bright future. I think that in Toronto, maybe more so than any other city, Richie, maybe with the exception of Montreal, there's so much pressure when you are a first-round pick and when you're a high first-round pick, and that goes to what Richie was talking about with Morgan Rielly. When you're picked fifth overall, everybody expects you to come in and all of a sudden dominate in every facet of the game. It doesn't work like that. You gotta take a few years to learn and adjust to the NHL game.
2.
Richard Pollock stays in the Eastern Conference and says that the Detroit Red Wings need to add grit down the stretch if they want to make the playoffs.
Everybody always assumes the Red Wings are going to be a playoff team. Right now, they're sitting tied for that final spot with Carolina. Carolina, my God.
I think everybody's tied for that last spot, Richie.
Yeah.
They are. So you're exactly right. I mean, the spread is something else. It's exactly what the NHL wants. And we talked about those points before. But, you know, you look at the Detroit Red Wings, and they have a lot of guys with great skill. You know, Thomas Tatar can get in there, Gustav Nyquist, and guys who can skate and can puck handle. But is there anybody really on that team who can muck it up? I mean, you know, Franzen's always injured. Bertuzzi is a shell of his former self. I'm surprised they've ridden him for as long as they have.
Probably Danny Cleary's the only guy.
That's what I mean, and he's not what he once was. And I have a lot of respect for Danny Cleary. They need a guy, a little bit of a younger guy, who can go and create off of some physical play. I mean, their puck possession game is a good game, but you can't be one-dimensional, and they've become one-dimensional, guys. They're not tough enough, and they're not big enough, and they don't create. They can't create offense in different ways, and it's hurting them right now. And I mean that even on the back end. They're not the toughest team.
What about a guy they have playing in Grand Rapids right now, Jordan Tutu?
I mean, that's not what I'm talking about, Drew. I'm talking about a guy who can be an impact top nine guy, and Jordan Tutu cannot do that.
And that's why he's in Grand Rapids. Unfortunately, they signed him. Was it a 4-year deal? I think they signed him to a multi-year deal, and it hasn't worked out. But no, they
want to get bigger. They have Riley Sheehan up.
Richie,
but I mean,
they need a Jordan Tutu from 5 years ago.
Right, and like a guy like Riley Sheehan, they add size, but that's not the guy they need right now. They need a guy who can be an impact player, who can get in there, and maybe it means trading some of those guys who have good talent for more of a future pick, like a guy with some good puck possession skills for a bigger guy who maybe isn't as good puck possession-wise, but can go to the net and create some offense. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Because, a guy like Mike Camilleri, you spoke about being rumored for him. He's a goal scorer. He's a straight goal scorer, and he's a good goal scorer. And they have trouble scoring goals, granted. But he's, again, a smaller guy. He's not going to be mucking it up. So you wonder if that's something they add and something else, or just that.
1.
Ezra Ginsberg, aside from the Boston Bruins, the St. Louis Blues might have the best fourth line in the entire National Hockey League.
I love the fourth lines because I'm a fourth liner. So as far as, Richie mentioned grit. I'll give you a guy that's got some grit who right now is playing on the fourth line but has played on the third line, Brendan Morrow. And that line right now of Brendan Morrow, Maxim LaPierre, and Ryan Reeves, who just got another contract from the St. Louis Blues. Of course, we know he's from Winnipeg. That line, you look at their stats and they don't have a lot of goals, but that line causes a lot of teams problems because they're very big and Brendan Morrow right now, they've had Chris Porter on that line a little bit. But Brendan Morrow right now on that line, because of the fact that they're so deep and they have Jaden Schwartz now playing on the top line in place of TJ Oshie. But because I think the Blues arguably have the best forward group in the NHL. Maybe they lack a superstar, but when you have Alexander Steen scoring the way he scored this year, they might have enough goals enough offense in their system, you know, to finally get over that hump and get past the second round of the playoffs. But that fourth line, I know Max LaPierre got the suspension earlier this season, and he's not exactly the most popular player. But that line almost always outworks the other team's fourth line. And I think that if you're looking around fourth lines around the NHL, I don't think you're going to find a better one, with maybe the exception of the Boston Bruins with Sean Thornton, Caron, Paille, those guys.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about the St. Louis Blues. We're going to compare the St. Louis Blues versus the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm going to ask, which team is better? You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Reminder, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 p.m. start time, 12 noon, that is, Saturday afternoon on this fine station. We'll get you set up for the Jets and the Habs. That'll take place on Sunday. And, of course, we will recap everything that happened between the Jets and the Canucks Friday night at MTS Center.
I think it's really appropriate that Remus played this song, Hash Pipe by Weezer.
Oh, God. This sounds like this might get us into trouble.
No, I've never got the Illegal Curve Hockey Show into trouble. Two teams.
Famous last words.
Super Bowl. The two states that have legalized that green substance. So I think it's relevant. I think that's why Remus played it.
Interesting.
No, I played it because it came up in order in the log. I don't control the music anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. See?
That's a good thing.
Well, he'll still play Bruce at the end of the show. Don't you worry.
That's become a staple. Not an Arthur staple, but it's become a staple of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show that we have to play Bruce Springsteen. We're still waiting to see if he comes to Winnipeg, hopefully. I know the first person that's going to be buying a ticket is this guy to my left here. So,
are you going to be wearing the pom-pom hat?
No, it's going to be the summer.
Okay. I've seen you wear a toque in the summer.
I've worn a toque in the summer.
Yeah. Summer has no good bearing on whether or not you're wearing a toque, let me tell you.
It's one thing to wear a toque in the summer, but the pom-pom is really exclusively for the winter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the pom-pom means, like, it's winter, I'm partying, let's go.
Really? It's a party pom-pom?
Yeah, I think pom-pom represents partying.
The St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks. You look at the Western Conference standings, and, of course, the Anaheim Ducks, you know, they got their second loss on home ice last night to the Minnesota Wild. But the Anaheim Ducks, they've got 83 points. But you look at the Central Division, and the St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks are tied at 77 points. The Blues do have three games in hand on the Blackhawks. But, you know, they've been going back and forth. The Blues have always been, you know, the team this is the year they're going to get over the hump, and this is the year they're going to make the playoffs. And each year they seem to just fall a little bit short. So I figured we'd spend this segment comparing the Blackhawks and the Blues, two very deep teams in the Western Conference, in the Central Division, and see, by breaking down each team in all their position groups and in all their facets, which team you guys think is the better of the two teams. Let's start in goaltending for both teams. You look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and they rely on a Corey Crawford and Antti Raanta combination in net, where the St. Louis Blues rely on Yaroslav Halak, Brian Elliott, and they have Jake Allen sort of lurking there in the background as their third goalie. Currently, he's in Peoria in the AHL. So, breaking down the goaltenders, which of those two teams do you think has the advantage over the other one?
You're talking like this season.
Yeah, just this season. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to give.
I can't go back in time.
I'm going to give the advantage to the St. Louis Blues, and I think Corey Crawford deserves a lot of credit for the way he responded 2 years ago in the playoffs. We remember what happened with Phoenix and how poor he played. Mm-hmm. And he responded last year, and he deserves all of the credit for taking that team to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning the Stanley Cup. And this year, he's been pretty good as well. And Antti Raanta has had to basically step in because Nikolai Habibulin is injured right now. I think he's only played maybe one game this year. He's a guy that was coming out of the Finnish league, very highly regarded from the Finnish league. He's played well. Antti Raanta, I think he's gone into a dozen games here. He's only lost a couple. But I'm still going to go with Yaroslav Halak and Brian Elliott because not only just the numbers, but I think the experience in the NHL right now. And I think if you're talking about these two teams going into the playoffs, I still think they have the advantage. Now, I think once you get into the defense and the forwards, it's a lot closer maybe. But I'm going to give it to Richie here, but I'm going to go with St. Louis. I think Crawford is a good goaltender, and you can't say that, you know, he hasn't won the big game now, but I'm still going to go with Halak Elliott. I think we're not factoring in the third goalie, even though I think that would maybe even be the tiebreaker if we needed to have one.
See, to me, I know Halak has had stretches where he's played really well, and Montreal, when they beat Pittsburgh and Washington, obviously he was great. That was a few years ago now, but certainly not to be discounted. But I'm going with Corey Crawford, guys, because Corey Crawford's a guy who just won the Cup. And he's developed probably better than I thought he would. And I don't love Halak, and I don't love Elliott. And Jake Allen, I mean, we're talking about this season. Jake Allen's not going to be a factor, likely. So,
yeah, unless they decide to move one of those guys.
I'm not worried about Brian Elliott if I'm a team going, you know, to be honest with you. I'm not worried about him at all if I'm a team going to the playoffs. And Halak, yeah, you know, he's all right. He could be solid at times. I'm taking Corey Crawford. I'm not saying you have, you know, the next Terry Sawchuk amongst that group, but I think Chicago over St. Louis in that regard.
Moving to the back end. The back end, I mean, is anchored by, you know, sort of two of the top pairings probably in the NHL altogether. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks trot out Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. They also have Nicholas Chalmerson, Johnny Oduya, Nick Leddy, and Sheldon Brookbank as their top six defense. Mm-hmm. Counter that with the St. Louis Blues. Jay Bouwmeester and Alex Pietrangelo. They also have Barrett Jackman, Kevin Shattenkirk, Ian Cole, and Roman Polak to round out their top six. Which of the two teams has the better defense in your mind? Richie, I'll start with you this time.
Well, I think the Blackhawks are the better defense, Drew, because I think Keith's better than Pietrangelo. I think Seabrook is better than Bouwmeester. I think that second combo is quite good. And then you look at their second pairings. You have Chalmerson and Oduya versus Jackman and Shattenkirk. I think the best of that bunch is probably Shattenkirk, but it's close in terms of Chalmerson. And then Oduya and Jackman are different players, but both solid players in their own respect. And then the third pairings, Nick Leddy and Roosevelt and Polak and Roosevelt are going to be your slower guys, your bigger guys. I like the way Roosevelt moves the puck more than I do Polak. And then you have Leddy against Cole. I think Letty's better. I think Chicago's got a better defense. I think Duncan Keith, you could say, is arguably the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, and I think you'd have a long argument about that because I think he's that good.
I think when we decided to compare these two teams, I was going back and forth as far as the defense. I it's a tie for me. I honestly can't pick a team. When you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, I think Duncan Keith is your Norris Trophy winner right now. You can throw in Shea Weber, you can throw in Ryan Suter, but Keith is definitely a finalist. But I think when you look at that top pairing, Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo, if they're not one, they're second. And Barrett Jackman, Shattenkirk. Shattenkirk has 36 points. Pietrangelo has 37 points. But both of those guys can move the puck almost as good as anybody in the NHL. Yeah. And Richie mentioned the second pairing, comparing that second pairing there. Jarmelson, physical guy. He can throw in a little bit of offense.
Can skate too.
Oduya's an unbelievable skater, a guy that really surprised me as far as how he really took on that second pairing role. And then you go to Ian Cole, Roman Polak. Polak is a guy.
Leopold's hurt too.
Leopold is hurt. You look at Polak and he's built like a little mini tank, very physical guy. And Leddy is a guy, he was a first round draft pick. Remember he was drafted by Minnesota.
Traded
he's another
for,
guy.
Cam Barker.
Yeah, he's another guy, Richie. Leddy could be a second pairing guy on many teams. He'd certainly look good on the Winnipeg Jets on the second pair. He's got great wheels. So honestly, I tried to pick one team over the other, and I think right now, to me, it's a tie. It's that close.
I don't recall making tie an option in this exercise, but for Ezzy, we'll grant him a little slack.
There's ties.
There's no ties in hockey.
Well, there used to be.
Yeah, there used to be.
That's a different conversation, but it's a tie. I honestly can't. If I don't feel confident enough in picking one, I'm not going to just.
A tie is like kissing Remus's sister.
That worked out quite well, the timing there.
Or Remus's brother, because he doesn't have a sister.
That's what I was. Yeah. Also a joke.
Looking at the offenses now, obviously we know, I mean, the names on each team. I don't need to run through them all.
Well, I mean, Drew, at the end of the day, St. Louis is a great team. Chicago has more game breakers. Alexander Steen's had a great year. It's not Jonathan Toews. Who on that team is Patrick Kane? Who on that team is even Marian Hossa? Who on that team is Patrick Sharp? I love David Backus's game.
What other team has any of these players?
That's what I mean. So, I mean, St. Louis is a really good team in 1 through 12, but I mean, to me, it's Chicago is the better team. They might have 77 points and have three games. St. Louis might have three games in hand. But St. Louis cannot beat good teams. Have you seen their record against good teams this year in the Western Conference? It's not good.
Jets have beat them.
Well, good teams. That's
I'm going to give the Chicago Blackhawks. I picked the Chicago Blackhawks, but getting back to what I said last segment in six things, I think if you look at the bottom lines.
But who? Okay, bottom lines is a factor.
No, but Richie, keep in mind, I just said Chicago. So I'm not saying that as a whole, because if you look at Chicago's big guns, you're right. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp's having a career year. Marian Hossa is still as dominant as the days of being an Ottawa Senator. But if you look at the St. Louis Blues, I think they do have a lot of depth. And the argument that we're going to be talking about for the next 3 months going into the playoffs is going to be, do the St. Louis Blues have those game breakers? And that's why Alex Steen, I think,
the answer is no.
If he scores at that level, I think he can be, but they're going to have to rely on other guys that are going to have to give them that offense. And TJ Oshie, he's having a career year. David Backus, underrated. Jaden Schwartz, a guy that Richie and I have seen play at UND when he was with the Colorado College, great player. He's having
like Pierre McGuire with that reference.
He's having a really good year. So the St. Louis Blues have an unbelievably deep forward group. And I mentioned Morrow, LaPierre, and Reeves are on that fourth line. I really like that fourth line. But, you know, you can't ignore the fact that your top line of Patrick Sharp, Jonathan Toews, and Marian Hossa, I think if it's not the best line in hockey, it's the second best line in hockey to the Getzlaf Perry line. So I got to give it to the Chicago Blackhawks, but I still think when you look at that depth on St. Louis, you got to give them a lot of credit because they can roll out four really good lines.
Our buddy Ken Weaves telling me that the Blues do own the Blackhawks this year head-to-head. The Blues don't do it for me. Don't get me wrong. They're a really good team. They're going to be a tough out. They could make a run. I think they need to make a move before they make a run. Meaning that I think they need to add. People keep talking about the goaltending, and I don't love Halak, but I'd add a game-breaking forward before I had a goaltender. That's what I would do. And I think that if these two teams met in the playoffs, I think the Hawks would win in six. Wouldn't be an easy game. Wouldn't be an easy series. I mean, the St. Louis will beat you down physically. But I think when it comes down to a game-breaker, when you look at St. Louis's depth, they'll get goals on you. But when it comes down to Toews against, you know, say, Backus, who you taking? Whose line are you taking? I think we all know the answer to that.
Last one, coaching. Hitchcock versus Quenneville.
Both great coaches, Drew.
That's a tie.
Probably a tie.
If not a little bit of an advantage to Hitchcock, maybe.
I don't think Quenneville gets enough respect for all that he's done over the course of his career.
Great coach.
But, I mean, they're both great coaches. They're different coaches. And the style of play of these two teams is completely different. Chicago pushes the pace. They throw guys up the ice when the puck's in their own zone. They take risks. They move it quickly, and they can skate. St. Louis is very structured in the way they play and more physical than the Hawks are and less skilled, I think, as a whole. So I think strategy is interesting. I think St. Louis would have difficulty against Chicago keeping up with them in terms of scoring prowess in a series. And I would love to see it. And I think, obviously, with this new format, you're likely going to see it in the second round of the playoffs, which makes for great television.
Sure. I think we'd all agree the Chicago Blackhawks are at the very least going to the second round. To me, my biggest concerns are from last year, you've lost Dave Boland and Michael Frolik. And right now, your second line center, at times you've used Andrew Shaw, and at times you've used Michael Hanzus. I believe tonight they're going to use Brandon Peary, who's been up and down from Rockford. They're going to use him as a second-line center. To me, that's going to be the determining factor, Richie, if they go back to the Stanley Cup Finals and win. And they've got to address that. And I think right now they're still one of the top teams. But you've also got San Jose and Anaheim sniffing at the door.
You do. And, I do have to say, sniff at the door, interesting.
Well, like a dog sniffs at the door.
Interesting. Sniff at the door.
Isn't that a common? Is that not a common phrase?
Have you heard that?
Knocking at the door.
I think knocking at the door.
Is it knocking at the door?
I mean, I have a dog, and she rarely sniffs at the door.
Remus is on point with the sound effects.
Yeah, Remus, pretty good.
I've been called a dog before, so I mean,
I will say this, Drew. I like this segment idea. This might be something to go, compare. I like this for maybe on an ongoing basis.
Remember how Hockey Digest used to compare two guys? Who's better? Remember they would take like Wayne Gretzky versus Mario Lemieux and they'd compare two players?
I like this. It could be team.
Kind of like that. Who's better?
It could be player.
Yeah, we could. This could be like a long lasting segment. We've got something here.
Remus, is there a sound of us throwing you into a dumpster if you play any more sounds?
There is a sound of us throwing into a dumpster.
Let's go to Brian
about that. Okay, it's not the Michael Remus clip show. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before 8 o'clock Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
You know, we've got the Rangers and the Islanders playing tonight in MSG, our good friends Matthew Leibel, Hustler at the game. I want to know when Illegal Curve is going to broadcast outdoors. I'm talking raw Illegal Curve. When are we doing this? Illegal Curve on the river. We doing it?
Well, our buddy Kenny Weeb is right. He says, no ties, is it? You can't pick ties, you know? You get to take a stand. For the next time we do that segment, it was a good idea from Drew. I like that idea. No ties.
Like wearing like
well,
a tie?
Yesterday's
like,
tie.
Oh, man, yesterday's tie was
why don't
the
we talk
of the
about
press
that for
box.
A second. Everybody in the press box wants to talk about Ezzy's
tie. Nothing wrong with that tie. It's
got
my dad's tie.
I got texts from people in the stand saying, what's Ezzy wearing?
That tie was a bold tie, my friend.
I liked it. I liked
it.
I
was,
I
Richie was giving me props. Everybody was saying it was such an ugly tie.
You got to, you know, I don't know about that one.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah, well, you're not exactly Mr. Fashion Aficionado there.
I'll tell you what, I'm not saying I would ever wear that tie, but on Ezzy, it was...
You got that black, blue one you wear all the time. That's your go-to tie.
I got a few different ties. I got a lot of blue ties.
You and Dave Minuk usually dress quite similar.
Blue, I got two color shirts, blue, white, and pink. That's three colors, but still.
At least the positive I'll give you on the tie is that I did like it sort of as the flashy tie with the flashy sort of pinkish hue shirt. So, I thought your idea was good. I'm not sure the execution was there, but the idea was pretty good.
There's only two games to go here before, you know, two home games left before the Olympic break. I'm trying to look good. You know, there's, you know, people that haven't seen me. I wasn't there Saturday. I was sick. I'm trying to look good, and you guys are giving me a hard time because of the tie. It wasn't a bad tie. Nothing wrong with
that tie.
We're the
only people giving you a hard
time. I'm
going to
wear that tie again.
All right, let's go.
Okay. NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
We start today in New York, where the Stadium Series game is going on. Reports out of New York, New York Post, Larry Brooks, as plugged in of an NHL writer as there is right now, reporting that Ryan Callahan, the Rangers captain, is reportedly looking for a 7-year, $42 million contract as he enters unrestricted free agency this offseason. And that ask by him or by his agent may end up in seeing him traded by the Rangers prior to the NHL trade deadline. What's Ryan Callahan going to get on the open market if he reaches it? And do you think he gets it as a New York Ranger or is he traded prior to the deadline?
Oh, good question, Drew. Let's start first off with the contract or the reported contract demand. If Ryan Callahan, a heart and soul guy, block shots, can do everything for you, more of the 20 to 25 goal scorer, you know, your 50 to 60 point guy.
His career high in points, is 54.
Yeah, like he's 50 to 60 point guy, 20 to 25 goals. He's your heart and soul guy. He's going to be he can be a captain. He is the Rangers captain. He can play on your penalty kill. He's going to be 29 next month. 7 years, $42 million for Ryan Callahan is too much money to pay him. And the problem is probably be somebody who will pay him that. He just plays such a physical style, Drew. I mean, you can go over his games played. Maybe I think that would be reflective of how tough of a player he is in terms of the way he plays, because he sacrifices his body. But think about it now, guys. He's turning 29. When he's 33, making $6 million, not a natural score. It's a tough one.
He's played 37 games so far this season. Mm-hmm. If he plays the rest of the year, he's on pace to play 65.
Okay.
Last year in the lockout-shortened year, he played 45 out of 48 games. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, 76 games, then 60 games, then 77 games. And then his first full year in the NHL, he played 81 games.
So, he's had some injury troubles, nothing too significant, but... the style of player that he is, as I mean, at least in my opinion, guys like that don't age particularly well in the National Hockey League because it's so physically demanding, and he's not afraid to get in on the forecheck. He's not afraid to hit. He's not afraid to do anything. But he's a more reasonable contract, in my opinion, would be 6 years, $30 million. I think that's a more reasonable middle ground for both parties there. Because remember, $5 million a year, first of all, getting a six-year deal is very important. I'm assuming a long-term deal for him and kind of his last big deal will be important. I think also $5 million a year for a guy who is not a natural scorer. And I don't mean that disparagingly. Like, he's not going to get you 30 goals and 75 points. So maybe 5.5 they go up to. But the 7 years, $42 million to me is too high of an ask. And I don't blame his agent for asking for that. I just don't think Seder will give it to him.
When you look at the years that have been given out in some of the contracts, and that's why I know Richie is much better at doing this. I kind of look at it differently, but really comparables are the name of the game when it comes to contracts. Love Travis Zajac. When you look at that contract and the years he got and the term he got and the way he's played right now, it doesn't look like a good contract. David Clarkson, love the guy. Another guy that came from the New Jersey Devils. Again, the amount of years and the amount of money he gets, you could say, look at those two guys and you could say, okay, well, Ryan Callahan, you know, he's probably a comparable guy in that sense. But I look at Ryan Callahan and I say, why not sign him to 3 or 4 years? Maybe he doesn't want that. He won't want it. Really, if you think about it, that makes more sense in the situation he's in. You mentioned he is the captain of the team. He's a great leader. Big fan of Ryan Callahan. And Richie, you mentioned that, you know, his ceiling probably right now at this point going forward is 20, 25 goals, 50 to 60 points, something like that. But really, this is a big contract for them. And I know we're going to talk again about Dan Girardi, another guy that's a UFA. Mm-hmm. He's going to want a lot of money, very good defensive defenseman, and he deserves it. Dan Girardi is an excellent defenseman. Ryan McDonough, a great pair there. One of the major reasons why the Rangers are in a playoff spot right now because they have suffered. We know what's happened with Michael Delzato, and we know that Mark Stahl has really struggled to regain the form that he's had. So you look at this situation, and I think you look at the numbers, and it's always, again, Richie is better at putting these comparables together, but I look at it and I say, okay, maybe too many years, but I'm not sure if the amount that he's getting or he's asking for is too high. But I think he's definitely a guy that you want to lock up because you have Derek Stepan there, and he's almost become the number one center there. Chris Kreider's taken a little while. He struggled. Remember, he came into the playoffs.
It's a lot of guys you're paying who aren't top-end offensive talent.
Right, but they're also young. And you have a situation where you don't want to get too young there, right? So it's a tough one. I look at that and I don't know if he'll get it.
Callahan's also not like a Ginla. It's not Billick. He's 5'11", guys. Like,
he's a smaller guy. Yeah. And you know, there is something to say that you look at Philadelphia and there's concerns that Scotty Hartnell, he's really turned his game up. Scotty Hartnell is arguably my favorite player in the NHL right now. But can he play that? He's 32 years old now. Is he going to be able to play like that at 35?
That's right.
There's concerns when you're a guy that goes into the corners and fights and plays that rough-and-tumble style of hockey. There are concerns. And even though Callahan, for the most part, has played most seasons, you mentioned he only missed 3 games last year, this year he's already having some injury problems. And are they going to factor that in? Is Glenn Sather going to look at that and say, no, we only want to sign him to 5 years? It's going to be a big issue there.
6 years, 30, to me, is very reasonable for both sides.
The other pending unrestricted free agent that the Rangers have and they've been discussing a contract with, as you mentioned, is defenseman Dan Girardi. Reportedly, he's looking for a 6-year, $33 million deal. That'll pay him $5.5 million per season on average. Apparently, Glenn Sather has countered with an offer of 4 years at $4.75 million per season. How do you see the Girardi situation in New York being handled?
Glenn Sather's one of those guys who beats those restricted free agents in negotiations. He's a tough negotiator with Glenn Sather. It's a tough one, though.
Girardi's going to be a UFA, though.
I know that.
Okay.
That's what I'm prefacing it by saying, you know, he gets those RFAs, but it's harder to get the UFAs.
Right.
Girardi's never going to be your top point producer. You know, his top point season has been 31 points, and you can move the puck, and he can play, in offensive situations if you need him to, but that's not his strength. His strength is as a lockdown defender. He's physical. He's tough. That guy will sacrifice again for the team. Like, these guys are heart and soul guys.
Durable.
Durable. I mean, you're talking about a World Cup, not in the Olympics. You're probably talking about Dan Girardi in consideration for the Olympic team because he's not the best skater. So Olympic ice is not something that, you know, you're going to be necessarily relying on him for. Again, what he's asking for here is not crazy because your defensemen are going to be so significant. Ryan McDonough is their best defenseman. Mark Stahl hasn't been to me what he was before the eye injury. That might take some time for him to recover. Obviously, Kevin Klein now and John Moore, different players. Moore, better skater, Klein. You know, a solid player. Nothing, you know, to write home about. But to trade Delzato, and Delzato is far different than Girardi, but to trade Delzato and then possibly get rid of Girardi and replace him with Kevin Klein and who knows what, that's a risky proposition. Dan Girardi is your best right side lockdown defender. And if you're talking about paying Girardi or paying Callahan, I think you're probably better off paying Girardi because of how many minutes he's going to eat up. And they're the same age. You know, he's 29, Girardi. But you're going to rely on that defense. And I realize they're not playing in the Tortorella system that they were before, as but you still got to play defense. And somebody's got to eat those minutes. And it's tough sledding out there. So I think that Sather gives more on this one than he gives on the Callahan one. And I could see them reaching probably... I wouldn't even be surprised if those guys signed for close to the same money. Maybe with Girardi, it ends up being 5 years... 25, maybe 27 and a half, five and a half per year. He's reportedly asking for maybe for 5 years. I could see that. But I think it's going to be similar numbers for these two guys because they are very important to what the Rangers are trying to do.
Before we go to break, do they both stay as New York Rangers next season?
I think they do.
That's a yes from Ezzy. Are you sure that's not a tie? You don't want to go with a tie there, Ezzy.
No, I mean, these guys, you know, you're talking Girardi, 8 years with the New York Rangers. Callahan's only played with one team, Richie. You mentioned Hart and Soul. I mean, these are two players that have been through battle with this team again and again. So the only way I don't see either of them staying is if both sides are really far apart. So I think they're so valuable to this team that they both are signed before they have a chance to become free agents.
I agree with Ezzy. You look at bargain deals and Ryan McDonough's $4.7 million deal, not only for this year, but for the next 5 years after, it's going to be one of the main reasons why they can lock up Girardi for that kind of cash. And Callahan, aside from Richards and Nash on the top of their books, they don't have anything on the books past 2014-15. So I think Callahan gets re-upped as well.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, one final segment on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. Richie, you seem excited to discuss something.
We never got to talk about it. It was not this past Saturday. It was a Saturday before. It was Hockey Day in Canada. You know, they had all, CBC had this, you know, the whole broadcast. The Jets were playing Edmonton. That was right after the game or right before the game. They, you know, they interview the players on different cities and different teams and different leagues. And they're interviewing Dion Phaneuf's brother. I think it was a senior league game or whatever it was, and you know usually those games wouldn't be broadcast on national television, and they're interviewing Dion Phaneuf's brother. I forget his name. They look very similar, and I think it was Cassie Campbell.
I think it's Leon Phaneuf actually.
Okay, whatever it was, the interview absolutely blew my mind. This guy's in a hockey league. He's about probably 24, 25. That gets no coverage. And they ask him questions after the first period on ice. And, you know, what's been the key for you guys? Oh, yeah, you know, sticking to the system. Sticking to the...
It's Dane Phaneuf. It's actually Dane Phaneuf.
You know, working real hard. Sticking to the system. What? I'm not saying they don't play a system, but this is one day you're on TV. Can you give me some kind of answer as opposed to the cliche hockey answer?
Did they have a net front presence?
That's literally, the interview was mind-blowing. I couldn't believe it. You have one day on TV, man. Like, obviously right now, at his career, he's probably not going to make the National Hockey League. Have a little fun with the interview. Talk about it. It's a great experience. So exciting to be on national TV. Well, you know, stick to the system, work real hard, and things will happen for us.
Put pucks in deep.
Oh, my God.
Dane Phaneuf played in the QMJHL for the PEI Rockets, so he played junior hockey.
I'm not denigrating his hockey ability. I mean, he...
No, I know. I'm just saying.
Generally speaking, you don't make the leap from Alberta senior hockey
leaguer. I mean, you know, you never know, Drew, but the point is can you have a little bit of fun with it? It was unbelievable.
Well, there was a guy who tweeted at us about an hour ago.
Net friend presence.
Who said, you guys should devote a segment to getting Richie fired up about something. World-class ranter. I think the people have gotten their money's worth worth tonight after that last little rant. Going back to some other happenings from around the NHL. Ryan,
another one, compete level. What does that mean? Competitiveness? We were competitive tonight. We tried hard. We had a good compete level. And then everybody says it. Why is everybody saying compete level? What does that mean?
I think what the
it means competitive.
See, it's obvious.
Yeah, there's a word for it.
I know you've mentioned this before, and you're right. I mean, your compete level is your competitiveness, but it's really to me your will too. I mean, you talk in hockey too. It's all about battles, and it's your willingness. So you have the will. Compete level is two words when it only has to be one. Well, that's what Richie's saying. I mean, he's right. Compete level is really a word that was created by the media.
Yeah, I swear, Pierre Maguire is like Webster's Dictionary now.
Hockey media buzzwords of 2014. Okay, net friend presence, compete level. What else we got here?
Oh, are we creating this or are you reading this?
No, I'm just off the top of my head.
Net friend presence. There's so many
200-foot game.
Oh, yeah, 200.
Yeah, 200-foot game, you know, not the 185-foot game or the 144-foot game or the, you know, what other ones are they?
Well, and again, like 200-foot game, that means that you're playing well in all three zones.
Why don't you have to play an 85? Yeah, why don't you have to play the width of the ice? You only have to play the length of the ice?
I could go on and on about
please do. We got about another 3 minutes to fill.
Well, no, I know there's some things we want to talk about, but I mean...
We could talk about them on Saturday.
The compete level, it blows my mind. Just create words. Stick...
Physicality?
That was stick-to-itiveness, whatever. Persistent, you mean? Is there any other words that we want to create? And then everybody says them. So, there's another one I had on the tip of my tongue. I forget what it is. Let me think about it while we finish the segment.
Well, it started in the NFL, but the one that really bothers me is when he's out with a leg. You know, the commentators, when the guy's injured. You know, he's not playing today. He's out with a knee.
Also, let me ask another quick rant. I'm in a ranting mood. Why do they call it the wall? It's the boards. Why have they Americanized the boards to the wall?
How is that Americanizing it?
Because I think it started with Mike Emmerich, who I have respect for. But he started calling it the wall about 10 years ago. Now everybody calls it the wall. It's the boards.
I think you're right. It's not. It's one thing to say the half wall, but it's to call the boards the wall. It's their boards.
Well, why? Hang on. Why is saying half wall better than half boards?
But the definition of a wall is to separate. Boards don't separate the crowd.
Fairly certain that's not the definition.
No,
of
but
wall.
Like wall. No, you put up a wall to like, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
To create a
barrier. But really, the boards, in the sense that a wall separates the crowd from the ice.
You have to say, I like your compete level right now.
No, but you know what I mean. I mean, it's
his stick-to-itiveness that he's continuing on with this wall boards definition is pretty good.
I don't know half of it means. Let's go.
Ryan Garbutt signs a 3-year deal with the Dallas Stars, 3-year contract extension worth $5.4 million.
He's having a good year this year.
Yeah, you know what, Drew? If you're a third, fourth line guy and you can be physical and you can create, he's a good skater. And yeah, if you're physical and you can toss in some goals and not back down from it, your opponents and cause havoc at times, you're going to find a way in the National Hockey League. I think the team is happy to have him on a 3-year deal under $2 million, and I think Ryan Garbutt's probably ecstatic that he's got a big contract like that relative to his last deal, and he gets the security. It's a win-win there.
Good for Ryan Garbutt. He's a Winnipeg boy playing with another Winnipegger, Cody Eakin, on Dallas. And what's really impressive as well, Garbutt's a guy that played in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. There are a limited amount of those guys who've actually gone on to make the NHL. There are obviously more than one that I can think of. Jordan Tutu's another guy.
Yeah.
Other players from the MJHL. Kasdorf is a guy that was drafted. Jason Kasdorf by the Winnipeg Jets, but good for him. He's a guy that was unsigned, and it's nice. As I said, he's having a great year this year for the Dallas Stars. He's a guy that can drop the gloves, tough as nails. He's built like a brick house. And yeah, good for him, Ryan Garbutt.
And the last one, P.A. Taparanto and Rene Bourque. Supposedly, a deal was discussed between the Avs and the Canadiens.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I mean, it's problem for problem, right? P.A. Taparanto is, you know, he's a softer player, and he's a good hands, and he can snipe. Rene Bourque is the classic enigma. He can skate. He's big. He's got a good wrist shot. He doesn't come to play more than half the time. So it's kind of problem for problem, and those deals usually, maybe they have a short benefit, but rarely end up as a long-term benefit for either side. There's a reason these two teams are trying to get rid of both these players.
The Habs acquired Rene Bork in a problem-for-problem deal when they traded Mike Camilleri.
I don't know if Camilleri is a problem, though. Camilleri's a scorer. Maybe they didn't love his contract. But you look at Bork, he's got $3.3 million for not only this year, but for the next 2 years. I mean, $3.3 million is not going to kill your salary cap, especially with it going up. But there's just so many games where he doesn't show at all. And when you don't show at all, your coaching staff is wondering why they put you in. Parenteau's going to be a scratch again. It's two games in a row. And that obviously shows you what they think of his value. And he's got 2 years left on his deal after this season as well at $4 million. So the cap, $700,000 difference there. But Parenteau was signed by Colorado, whereas, as you mentioned, Montreal traded for it. That was a Gauthier trade, too.
That's it for Wednesday evening and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Arthur Staple of Newsday for joining us. He's live at the Stadium Series at Yankee Stadium. Still scoreless, 8 minutes into the second period in New York. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 will recap Jets Canucks and will preview Jets Habs. For my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host Drew Mindell. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.